You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
I'm Calvin, and you're listening to Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. This show is an experiment in civility, gathering people who disagree to sit down face to face and having them discuss their disagreements. Do we ever arrive at consensus? Sometimes. What's most important is we've got the conversation started.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. I am your host, Calvin Moore. I'm here with my co-hosts, Kent Strait and Steve Phelps. Not going to ask how they're doing because right now, really don't care. This is a special one-off episode. Just kind of wanting to gauge how people are doing right now, especially within the African-American community and the ally community right now, in the push for social justice and racial justice here in America. We're recording just after video footage has come out of the police in Minneapolis killing an unarmed black man by the name of George Floyd, which is fresh on the heels of Ahmaud Arbery being killed a few weeks ago in extrajudicial lynching. So it's kind of hard to keep up. So we wanted to kind of do a check-in and do an episode titled Wild Black. And so I just put out a call on Facebook today to see who would be willing to come on and talk about what their feelings are and their thoughts are. And I got some questions lined up here. But in no particular order, we've got Christopher Moore, my brother, calling in from Afghanistan. Cedric Lundy, who's been on the show before as well. Anthony Holden, April Patterson. Steve Patton and Sean Talbot will be jumping on the line here in a little bit. Sean's calling in from Canada, and Steve is calling in from will be calling in from Washington State. And then we have anti-racism activist Jennifer Kinney on the line as well, a white ally. But let's dive in. First, I mean, how's everybody doing right now? I mean, with the obviously the newest death of an unarmed black man at the hands of the police, George Floyd. How's everybody doing at the moment?
Not okay.
Not at all.
Not okay, April? What's going on? No.
I think I am just, I'm just pissed. I'm tired. I'm sad. I'm just angry, and I want to fight back. I just want to fight back. And, you know, I want our men to some sort of way be able to suit up with all the firearms they need, whatever they can do to protect themselves, to feel safe, to go outside. But they are literally, they are hunting our black men like literally like animals. Like, it's unreal. It is unreal. And, you know, to watch the video of...
Oh, so you watched it. Real quick, before you go on, how many of you watched the video?
I saw it.
I just saw the pictures. I haven't watched it. I've been very intentional in not watching it, which is why I think I'm doing better than I would have been if I had. And I just, I couldn't watch it based upon my, like, my chest hurt all day after watching the Ahmaud Arbery. So I'm again at that point, and this is me personally, because I know it's not the same for everybody. And I know there's mixed views, which I support all those views on actually watching the video. But for me personally, I just can't deal with watching that trauma.
Okay. Chris, did you watch it?
I did. As a matter of fact, everybody in my office watched it, and most of the folks in my office are black. Not all, but most. And we're all pretty much feeling the same, hurt, angry, following the protests that's going on afterwards. But yeah, I caught it.
Okay. Yeah, I have not. I will not. I couldn't watch the lynching of Ahmaud Arbery. I couldn't watch it. Honestly, after, I think the last video I actually watched, to be honest, was Tamir Rice. That's how far back we got to go for me to say, yeah, I watch it. And the only reason I could watch that, you know, in quotation marks, is because it was so quick. You know, and that's the whole case against it, right? Like, you did that in like 2 seconds and you shot this kid.
And it was from a distant, grainy camera. It was not a cell phone high definition camera.
Right. So, yeah, I could not. I mean, I saw the picture and that was all. Oh, I saw the picture from two different angles. The one of the white police officer on his neck, and then the three other police officers, you know, holding him down on his back. Read the story that they dragged him out of his car. And then, of course, the character assassination started pretty quickly after that.
TMZ did release a second video of the 4.5 minutes before that, where they did pull him. The lead up, and then very, very nonchalant video. It doesn't look like anything's going on with that one. I don't know if it's about 4.5 minutes long. Just shows that there was no fighting back. There was no resistance, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess it was I've had to work, and two, I've purposefully tried to not get into too many of the details of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've read what I've, you know, had to read to be informed. I understand this time it was ostensibly about writing bad checks. At first I was like, who the fuck is still writing checks? But two, I mean, some places it's still happening, but it's just a long line of doing things while black. I think, who was the first person they said, I can't breathe? Michael Brown? Michael Brown?
No, Eric Garner. Eric Garner.
Yeah, Eric Garner was, selling, either selling CDs or Lucy's?
Cigarettes. Loose cigarettes.
Yeah, Lucy's. Yeah. Okay, so he's selling Lucy's. We've got Tamir Rice playing in a little playground with a toy gun he shot. You got, you know, a kid just walking in a neighborhood, and he shot. There's George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. You've got, you know, people. Thankfully, no violence happened, but you got Barbecue Becky calling on people while they're barbecuing. I think today a video came out of a guy calling on people in a gym at a WeWork.
Yeah.
You got a woman Jefferson
playing video games with her nephew.
Yeah, a guy sitting in his own apartment who's shot by a woman in the wrong apartment. You got
awesome, Sean. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and here's the thing. Like, was it the New York Times just released a full front page spread of all the coronavirus victims, right, in the United States? And like, how many pages would that be? The full issue of the New York Times if we had to do that for black people killed at the hands of law enforcement? In the history of this country, I don't know. That's just me spitballing and thinking. I don't know, but yeah, I hope not. Sean just got in here. Hey, Sean, have you watched the video? Sean, you there? All right, I think Sean's muted. Let me see if he's
connecting.
Muted. Oh, he's connecting. Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. He didn't connect the audio yet. We'll just wait on that to come in. But let's keep going. I want to hear how the other people are going. April, I did interrupt you, but I want to hear how the others are doing as well.
That's totally cool. That's fine. That's fine.
Cedric, Anthony, Jennifer.
Hey, I can. I guess I can say something. To answer your question, the last black lynching I saw on video was Eric Garner. And this was like a little ways, like after the fact that it happened, and you know, it still kind of haunted me. The way I feel about this latest lynching, and I know it's understandable, but I'm a little ashamed to say it. Like, there's a quote that's going around saying, you know, I'm paraphrasing, being black is like hearing that one of your own just got lynched, and you know, you're either like very devastated trying to deal with that for the rest of the day, or you're numb to it. And, you know, either way, it's an emotional battle. You know, I feel myself, you know, in the latter half being, you know, disturbingly numb to it. And, you know, I don't like that feeling. I want to be angry. But at the same time, I'm just too devastated to, like, you know, be angry. You know what I mean? Am I making sense?
Oh, yeah. No, you're.
Yeah, 100%. Making sense.
Absolutely.
I mean, part of the history of lynching is that it was meant to be a public display to strike fear into the other blacks in community. So they knew that if they stepped out of line, they would suffer the same fate.
Mm-hmm. Sean, have you been able to connect yet?
He's on mute. He's on mute right now.
I'm going to unmute him. Let's see. Hey, Sean, you there?
I finally managed to get in. Yes.
All right. Excellent. So, have you watched the video? And what are your thoughts been so far in the last couple of days?
To be honest with you, I've just heard the first few sentences on this call, so I don't know. I know what you're talking about. I know the video you're referring to. I just don't know where you are in the conversation.
No. Literally, we are on that question, so I'm just giving you a chance. This is the first couple questions we've asked. One, have you watched the video gosh, again, keeping names up is so difficult right now. George Floyd. Yeah, okay. George Floyd. What are your feelings and thoughts right now?
Yeah, I reluctantly watched it today. I had seen the images over the past day or so, as it was populated on social media and everything. And you know what? there was sort of an empty feeling, empty feeling that washed over me when I watched them. And it was hard to describe, but I felt numb. I wasn't angry as I probably should have been, but it seems to happen so often anymore that I almost don't know what to think. And even now, trying to answer my thoughts or share my thoughts, I'm having a difficulty with understanding why the reoccurrence and why we seem to be settling into the same trick. You know, and the trick is this. When I get tuned in a couple seconds ago, I heard the same reoccurring conversation of history, how we got here, where it started from, lynching, what the purpose was, and that. Okay, we get it. What I don't understand is why we don't understand more about the system and how to unravel the system, even though we have a group of people that are specifically against this, or black people in general. They've stated this is their case. They've managed to elevate themselves in politics. The FBI in 2006 under George Bush has put out a report acknowledging the plan of the KKK to infiltrate police, the judicial system, judges, the district attorneys and others. And This the gameplay that is at hand right now is one I don't understand why people aren't unraveling, right? As soon as I hear, we're going to the grand jury. As soon as they say that means they're subverting the entire process.
Yeah.
Everything about the process, they're just subverting it. They're going around an actual jury. And the district attorneys are the ones who put it in that situation, and no one says anything else afterwards. It just vanishes. And then the perpetrator just walk.
Yeah.
And then it happens again. And then it happens again. And then it happens again.
Yeah. You know what?
EQ did a great article on the grand jury process regarding Tamir Rice in particular, and it's exactly what you described.
Yeah, and to the first point you made, and both you and Anthony were saying, hey, I just kind of felt numb. And why hasn't this changed? And it's interesting because there's this myth of progress. And I'm not saying that we haven't made progress, but I think the myth of progress is conflated with the idea that we've arrived. See, we had a black president. We had a black president. So it's not like it was. It's not like it was, Calvin. And I'm like, okay, you know what? People who say, hey, Calvin, it's not like it was in the 50s. Guess what? The people in the 1950s were like, hey, man, it's not like it was in the 1920s. It's not like it was in the 1800s. And so one of the things, though, about that feeling of being numb, I almost wonder, and I hate to go all the way back to this point, but you kind of have to. If we're calling them modern-day lynchings, lynchings were used to instill fear in the black community. And prior to Jim Crow America, not that lynchings weren't happening during slave times, but prior to Jim Crow America, you had the antebellum South, right? And you had slaves who were not just whipped in these solitary moments, like let's go off into the barn and do this in private. They would whip the slaves in front of all the other slaves, which is why I love two scenes. One from the movie Glory with Denzel Washington, right?
Yep.
And then also with Kunta Kinte in Roots, when they're breaking Kunta Kinte and making him change his name to Toby. Both of those are taken directly from diaries of slave owners of how you basically broke a horse. You would break a man and you would do that in front of other people. And so for me, I feel like what we're seeing, like the picture of the cop with his knee on the back of the guy, I don't know that he's sitting there consciously thinking, hey, let's kill this N-word. Let's take them back to slave days and remind them who's in charge. But the imagery is inescapable in terms of where we come from and what we're still going through.
What exactly are you thinking then with your knee on someone's trachea?
I don't know anything about how I don't know anything about.
Like, he's screaming, I can't breathe. Like, what part of you just, and then your partner turns a back to it. So,
yeah.
I'm really angry about it because I don't get that he doesn't have to be thinking, lynching or whatever. What part of you as a human thinks that that's okay?
And, the interesting thing about. Say again?
I believe he actually was. If you watch the video, and you look at the context, you watch the body language. There were multiple elements. There was the officer that was on the guy's neck. There was an officer that was kind of standing guard, and then there were other onlookers who were trying to get them to stop. And the officer that was on the guy's neck had this impudent look on his face, like daring anyone to come and do anything, and he just stayed there. He didn't move. He didn't heed any kind of warning that the guy was in danger. The other officer, quite literally, not only did he turn his back to seeing it, but he turned to kind of guard the activity while keeping others from being able to help, with his gun at the ready in case somebody decided that they were just going to throw caution to the wind and charge in and try to help. He was actually kind of keeping them back while these onlookers were screaming, hey, check his pulse. You're killing him. Get off him. You don't need to do that, so on and so forth. But the guy that was on his neck was just looking in the camera like defiantly and just stayed there. He never knew I passed out. So I kind of feel like there was definitely a darkness and some degree of intent with him. If nothing else, if for no other thing than to say, this is happening and there's nothing you can do about it. That's the vibe I got off of watching him.
So if you guys don't know, Chris is my brother, my older brother. And it's interesting because right before he said that, I feel this weird angst of April, when you said, how do you, what are you doing? What makes you think that that's okay to do to another human being? My initial thought, and having been raised in conservative white circles, what was she wearing? What was he doing? Those kind of questions come up in relation to this kind of shit. For my thought to your question was, well, I don't know anything about police procedures and their training of taking someone down. Was it at, like, and Same thing with the again, not Eric, not Eric Garner. Who was a guy choked out for Lucy's?
Eric Garner.
Okay, yeah, the illegal chokehold, right? Like, oh, they had that hold before, and now it's illegal. Was this guy from before it became illegal and it's doing the old school stuff? I don't like my initial thought is, while I should be feeling angry, black people are also conditioned to defend whiteness in a way. Like there's a whole group of people, like, if you just live this way, you'll stay off the white man's radar.
Right. It's the myth of black respectability.
Yes. Respectability politics, right? You know, that black respectability. And so you brought up the word, you saw what I was going for there, but Cedric, your thoughts on like black respectability and that pull, do you ever feel that at all? Like,
not anymore.
What we grew up in. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And not anymore. But you know, part of my story is that I started going to white evangelical churches when I was six.
So did me and my brother.
Right. I'm a pastor by trade. Every church I've ever pastored in is a white evangelical church. So I believed that I was the embodiment of what I now understand to be a myth of black respectability. And I saw it when I spoke up with Trayvon Martin. And all I said with the Trayvon Martin thing was, while I understand legally why George Zimmerman was indicted, I fear that this will mark open season on young black men, because if an average citizen can kill a young black child with impunity when the 911 dispatcher explicitly told him not to engage, then police can have a field day. And what have we seen transpire for the last 7 years? And I said that, and oh, the shitstorm I had to endure by the people who I am discipling, spiritual forming, baptizing their kids. And as more and more of these average, everyday individuals, right, started getting killed over some BS, I was like, that could be me. But I'll tell you what was a moment for me is when I'm driving back from a lunch and I see a black man walking across the crosswalk who looks a little, and I hate this being used as an adjective, but I'm gonna use it just to give our listeners a picture. He was looking, quote, ghetto. And I caught myself immediately checking to see if my door was locked, and I was absolutely disgusted with myself.
Like the beginning of Office Space?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but here's the thing. The guy needed shoes. Fortunately, I was disgusted enough with myself to take a second look at that man, see his shoes, and not to toot my own horn, I ended up giving him the shoes off my own feet. I owed him that much because of the way I had been trained to do the work of white supremacy on that dude that I knew nothing about. I yeah. owed him those shoes. That's not a pat on the back from me. That's what I owed him. I owed him
I have a question for you, Cedric.
Yeah.
Before you, when you acknowledged to the congregation in the church, and then you found that they got upset when you mentioned, you know, the future as you saw it, what were they saying to you? What was the response? Yeah. What
were they saying? Bro, look, I wasn't even saying it in the church. I was just the middle school youth pastor. I was saying it on Facebook.
Okay.
Okay? Just put it this way. Ironically, near the end of my tenure, within the last year of my tenure, and keep in mind, I've been at this church for 10 years. 10 years. I was the middle school pastor through 4 different high school youth pastors, which should tell you something.
They never promoted you. I mean, like, the normal white evangelical ladder is middle school pastor to you know, senior high pastor to executive pastor to senior pastor.
That's another story. You're right. And at the same time, there's part of that that I personally have to own. If you know anything about the Enneagram, I'm a 9, and I'm the classic fall asleep to your own dreams and aspirations.
Okay, gotcha. That's fine. At least you know yourself.
That being said, like, they put in a social media policy. And it was specifically designed at Talking Politics. And it was years later that one of my former students who said, like, hello, to speak about anything that has to do with people of color or women is an inherently political issue, because the only reason why women and people of color have rights that are recognized in this country is because of the political process. It was not given to them inherently through our founding documents.
You know what's interesting about what you just said there, Cedric? I have a friend. He's a good friend. His name is Craig McGlasson. So if you can't tell by the last name, white dude. He is a pastor at a large suburban church in Troy, Michigan, which is one of the whitest cities you can be in in Michigan. Probably a little less than Holland, Michigan, but very white, very well-to-do, very, very, very large church. They hired him in, and he was the pastor of another church. They hired him in. He left the church that he started. But either way, I never, ever see him post anything political. Never. Nothing racial, nothing political. But it's funny, he and I will go to the gym, and he'll ask me political questions along a faith-based line. And I have been posting things about what's going on. And the furthest I think he can do is like my posts. Mm-hmm. That's all he can do. Yeah. He will not comment. And I know that the church that he works for, they'll put a quash on that real quick. But hey, Sean, I thought your question of Cedric was great. I do have a question in terms of what racism you all have seen come out of. Okay, so I mean, again, George Floyd has been killed. What racism have you seen hit hit social media, hit the internet? Maybe conversations you've had with friends who have questions about maybe what was he doing? What have you seen hit the internet? Anthony, I'm going to throw that to you first, because you've been kind of quiet. Have you seen anything
in relation to this incident?
Yeah.
No, because my main social media go-to is Facebook, and I wouldn't be friends with someone that would say something, you know, irresponsible or even inadvertently, you know, insensitive or something like this. So
okay,
no, I have it on my end.
Okay, fair enough. Chris, Sean,
I have seen a few posts with other people capturing responses and comments from racist people. So there are a couple out there on Facebook where I guess one guy said something to the effect of, you know, good that he died. I enjoyed watching it.
Jesus.
Troll. So I get to the point where I'm like, okay, is this a real account or did somebody just make this?
Is this a bot?
Right. But you know, it stirs up even more anger. You know, people will look into it and they'll find out, yeah, this person really is real, or they'll find, no, this person isn't real. Somebody made this up. Like, for example, the cop that actually did the killing, somebody made a fake Facebook page saying, hey, this is him, depicting him in a MAGA hat that read, keep America white, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, make white great again. I did see that. Right, okay. I was like, this gotta be fake. I'm hoping it's fake.
Yeah, it did. You know, I looked into it. I'm like, yeah, this is fake. But it stirred up anger. So, you know, there are people who are genuinely racist. There are people who are responding with racism. And there are people who are stirring up more racial hatred. And I'm not exactly sure what the end goal is there, but it's happening.
I'm not sure there needs to be an end goal.
Why is it that, like Anthony, as soon as you heard Chris say that there was a comment, like I'm glad that he died or whatever. First thing was trolling. What if that's just a real person feeling exactly that?
I mean,
it's not trolling.
I mean, both possibility, but I mean, like, the audacity and gall to go on social media and post that. Like, you really think people can't trace like a bot to like the original owner of who made the comment? Like, you know, trolling has been really nasty over the years. Racist, disgusting, what have you. So that's my immediate go-to with that. But yeah,
but the audacity to kill somebody with people watching, like that's,
April, the only thing I would say about trolling is, I think it's both and rather than either or. There are people who, something happens and they're just like, they are gross, ugly people and they get a rise out of stirring up anger. Hey, I'm just going to jump in here, stir the pot, jump out and just watch people get angry. I get a kick out of that. Yeah, I'm racist. All I got to do is say one thing and I'm going to rile up the whole fucking room. Yep. So, I mean, I think those are trolls. Those are troll type people. I don't think that Anthony was saying that a troll was fake, but
okay. Not like a bot. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're saying that's a real person feeling how they feel, but they do it for a reaction.
You know, actually,
I got personal trolls that I know, like, I know them from church.
Yeah. I got into an argument with somebody on Jennifer Kinney's wall the other day. I was like, what the hell is wrong? What are you on? What are you on right now?
April has been on that conversation too with this individual and been like, I'm out. See ya.
I'm like, because I'm going to drive wherever you are in a second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I found your IP address, bitch. I'm on my way. No. So, I mean, Chris, to your point, I did see the MAGA hat thing, the make America white again, but I had to do that whole, is this fake, is it real? Thankfully, I think a couple days ago, New York Times did say, they had an article about, you know, like 30% of people that you're arguing with on the internet aren't even real people. They are bots, right. But there are obviously real people out there as well. So it's in how to spot someone who's doing something fake, how to spot doctored pictures. So my first thing when I saw the cop in the MAGA hat, that's an easy narrative. Hey, look, he's clearly a racist because you see the hat that says make America white again or make white great again. That's what the hat said. Make white great again. And I saw someone post that. I said, please tell me that hat is doctored because there's no way that guy wears that hat on social media and keeps his job with a black chief of police to Minneapolis. There's a 0% chance of that happening, right. Period.
Well,
and so.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, so this is Minneapolis, right? This is the same city that Philando Castile was also murdered and lynched in. And one of the, there's a great NPR Minnesota podcast called 74 Seconds, which is the amount of time it took between the beginning of the encounter and when Philando Castile got shot. And when in their second episode, they did a feature about Officer Yanez. They talked about some of his training. And some of his training included a bulletproof mind, which you can find the guy who is the inventor of this class on YouTube, a day with killology. Police trainer, a day with killology.
Okay.
Like a
police trainer, Dave Grossman, okay? This guy specifically trains police officers to be willing and ready to use their gun.
There's a, I cannot remember who had an interview with him, but I can see it clearly in my mind.
Right.
It took place in a bar, sat down with that guy and talked about that and about how quick their reaction time is.
Right. So yep. Officer Yanez did 20 training hours of this bulletproof mind. He did 2 hours of de-escalation.
Yep.
So again, to your point, It doesn't have to be this clan wear a robe wearing, hood wearing white supremacist who's just got a hard on to kill black people. It does not require that. But because we have this caricature of racism and white supremacy being Klan people, we fail to realize one of the key parts of our history was the response to the Selma March. So the reason why protests don't work anymore is because they learned a lesson from Selma. And it was this. Most of America couldn't stomach watching that kind of racism display, right? When they watched on national news television, Black people get beat within an inch of their life marching, that's when America decided we don't want to be that kind of racist. They didn't say we don't want to be racist. They just said we don't want to be that kind of racist. We still want to be the kind of racist that don't want Black kids coming to our school. We still want to be the kind of racist that, like, wants to make sure that the civil unrest stops and is put an end to. We're still the kind of racist that is okay with legislated and policy racism. We just aren't the kind of racist that like seeing Black people get
beat. Right. So the evolution of that, and I want to get to the next question that I have here. The evolution of that, interestingly enough, has been, yeah, we don't want to be that kind of racist. That's clear. That's overt. We don't like that. People are getting beat up within an inch of their life. That morphed into, we will only believe it is racism when we see that kind of thing. So again, right. I mean, it was quiet till you got to the riots of 1967 in Detroit. Then you got the LA riots, you know, with Rodney King being beaten. Yep. You know, Dave Chappelle had a great joke about that on Killing Them Softly. Like, white people didn't believe it until they saw that that Rodney King got beat in the streets. They're like, honey, did you see this? Black people are getting beat like hotcakes on the cover of Time magazine, right? But now with the proliferation of social media and everybody having a camera, a handheld camera in their hand now, you know, well, obviously handheld is in their hand, but you know, you got your iPhone, you got your Samsung, and everything's got a great camera with high definition footage. Now it's, you know, I won't believe it unless there is, well, I mean, now we've gotten to the point where I won't believe it unless there's footage. Now we're at the, I need to see the 24 hours of footage of that person's life before that.
Hey, look,
we're right, you know, what led up to that? Yeah, so I mean, to Steve's point, TMZ had to release four extra minutes of footage beforehand. This is the lead up. Here's the wind up. You got the pitch. This is the wind up, right? And it's exactly what we said it was, right? You know, it's exactly what we thought it would be. And so that's just kind of where we are right now. But my question about this now is, okay, so we see the police doing this. I want to know the thoughts of everybody on this panel, allies included, obviously. What are your thoughts on the police as an institution? I mean, do you feel comfortable interacting with cops on an individual level, or does the constitutionality of the institutionality of them make it harder to even interact with cops one-on-one? I'll tell you, for me, I'll start with that. We had an altercation with our neighbor across the street. He was being pretty belligerent. I was keeping it pretty low key. He's a hot tempered guy. I'm not, but we had to call the cops to get this situation resolved. And my wife said, "Calvin, go in the house. Go in the house." My wife is white, but she knew if the cops pull up and talk to a white woman, they'd be more apt to talk to her, even though the guy screaming at us was a white guy. They'd be more apt to talk to her than me. If they showed up and saw me and a white guy going at it, they would assume
that aggressor.
It was me, mm-hmm. that I'm the aggressor who started this confrontation. They're not going to come in and see all this, right? but either way, That's our interactions with them. Like, I do not interact with the police, other than the horse cops in downtown Detroit. That's a true thing. They have they're on horseback because they say people will come up and talk to a cop on horseback because they want to see the horse than they will somebody who's in a squad car. So by and large, I do not interact with police on an individual basis because I am terrified of the institution, while simultaneously believing cops, most cops are out there trying to do a good job, right? They want to serve and protect, but at the same time, I'm scared because of the color of my skin and how they're being taught by people like Cedric was talking about, right? Hey, you know, first ask questions later.
If 5% of cops are flat out evil, and I think that may be high, but if 5% want to hurt you, you wouldn't get in your car if you had a 1 in 20 chance of dying.
No.
So just don't talk to anyone. Don't talk to anyone.
Anthony, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, and, you know, that's a shame. I agree with you, Calvin. I think, you know, you hit the nail right on the head how I feel. I know there are good cops out there, but it really is. And I say it's a shame. It really is a roll of the dice when you come into contact with law enforcement, whether you're the one making a complaint call or someone else is making a complaint call against you. In this day and age, I mean, it's just a roll of the dice. And I get a little apprehensive around cops. I don't know.
Sean, you're in Canada. You're so close to Detroit that, I mean, you're South Detroit. Your thoughts on I came over to Canada one time and I got pulled over immediately and I still had the same reaction, even though Canadians are so nice. That's our thought, right? What are your thoughts on police in the country you live in? As a black person in Canada, I don't know what the history has been there with your police and black.
Just for the record, I'm actually a dual citizen. So my dad was. Yeah, he's from Detroit. And my mom's Canadian. So I was born in Canada, raised educationally in Canada, but socially I'm American. I spent my weekends and summers growing up over in Detroit, Southwest Detroit. So anywhere I go in North America, no one can tell where I'm from because I speak with a Canadian American accent of some sort.
Right.
I actually want to go back. I can readdress the question that you actually asked me in regards to the police in Canada versus the United States. Okay. However, there is something that I think is missing in this conversation, and it's the same thing that gets missed in every conversation on this subject. And it's the fact that we never really get below the surface of the conversation. We deal with the reaction of something that someone else did, right? And like it's like picking fruit off a tree after the tree dropped the fruit. You don't know how that tree grew. You don't know what it took to fertilize that tree, where it even grew or why it grew, and why it's so strong in that type of tree. You just know that it dropped this specific fruit. These things that are happening now, they started somewhere, and they're continuing to be fertilized and fed somewhere, and no one's really not understanding, but getting down into the reason why, who, where, and when these conversations happen, because there's a code of silence. Just like with the police, there's a code of silence that happens if anyone tries to uncover the truth, which is why now when you look at the video versus what was reported by the police that was at this said incident, they don't match up. Mm-hmm. They said one thing on paper, you know, they got this story together, but they didn't realize there's a video out there. And when that comes out a month or two later, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then that's the same thing that happens in society. If you notice, when there was all these guys with guns and everything were at the Michigan State Capitol, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, the entire internet was on fire over just wanting to go outside, right? Now, look at the same level of conversation you have right now when watching this guy being murdered on television. Those same people that were crying about their freedoms aren't crying about his, are they? Why? Mm-hmm. Why is that? And those are the things that you need to uncover, because the people who aren't talking now, you have to listen to what people say and watch what they do, but also, more importantly, listen to what they don't say, right, when the time is appropriate. And this is one of those times the people that are in charge of America basically aren't saying anything because they know something about it, right? They understand. It's like that indoctrination thing. What was the indoctrination and why is the silence being maintained, right? I'm, to be honest with you, starting to become more immersed in the understanding of what's going on that side of the border, because when I was a young adult, I stopped going over there because the drug gang was being getting too strong for me, and I wasn't raised that way, right? So I just stopped going over there. A lot of my friends were getting killed. I didn't get it. So I skipped a lot of time over there. And when I went back, all of this stuff was going on. Like, it was before Barack Obama was elected, but all these murders and things were happening and by the police. And it started to raise a question, because you do not see that over here, right? The law enforcement, there's no profit aspect to anything over here having to do with the public, period. So when the police arrest you, you're actually doing something you shouldn't be doing, right? Unless, unless they have, you know, there's something wrong with them, and they'll be found quickly and eliminated. Not saying that they all are found and they don't do anything wrong that's racist. They do, but it's not as obvious and
right.
supported. As what, like what we see going on now in the
it's not incentivized in Canada to fill prison beds, yeah, things exactly. like that.
Exactly. Okay. And that, and that's where I'm, in my opinion, this conversation really needs to be gone.
Well,
really needs to go into the 13th Amendment.
Get them.
If you read it, the 13th Amendment really should. And it talks
Sean, we're trying to get the universal health care like you guys got right now. Like, that's like far down the totem pole for us here in America. That's the way it is. Like,
but Sean is absolutely right, because what he is,
yeah, he is, he's absolutely
is
right
to the fact that the prison industrial complex is more than halfway to replacing the free labor force that we had in slavery.
Yep.
Right. And even though that labor force through the prison industrial complex is not technically free, they're getting paid somewhere between 16 to 96 cents an hour. Yeah, so you got all these people complaining about Mexicans, right? Not that they can tell the difference between South Americans and Central Americans in the specific country they come from, right?
Right.
They're the ones that get blamed for taking all these jobs. No. You gave your jobs away when you supported war on crime, war on drugs, aka the war on black people.
And there is that silence that I keep talking about, right? And if you listen to what people say, like the politicians, especially the real hardcore conservative ones, and what they say, like, listen to what they say. I'm a strict constitutionalist. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Get them,
right?
What do they mean by that? They're serious. They mean something, but what do they mean? And no one gets a follow-up answer to that question. No one asks it. What do you mean by that? But if you just keep listening to them, they get around their buddies, then they'll talk about this 3/5 thing. What do you mean by that? It's documented, but what do you mean by it? The Constitution. Then you start unraveling and putting puzzles together when you hear more of them talk, and you really start reflecting on things like, why are they flying conservative flag, whatever that thing is.
Confederate flag.
Traitor
flag. Yeah. What does it reference? What does that flag reference? Mm-hmm. The Civil War, right? So you go back and you start listening back to those pieces of the puzzle where you are asking, what do you mean by that? And you start to figure and understand that you are still in a civil war. It's just not being fought with guns. It's being fought with the law and law enforcement and judges and all these things. All of it looks, acts, feels just like that time frame, and people aren't paying attention. And that's
silence. Sean, I did not expect the civics lesson on American history from the Canadian. I am loving that. I got to tell you right now. But this was literally instituted in Reconstruction America when the Confederate senators, the traitor senators, were allowed back into the Senate. They explicitly stated that they were able to do more coming back into the Senate than they were ever able to accomplish being in rebellion, which is interesting. That's a point of historical fact, but I do have a question. So Martin Luther King, obviously, you know, our magnum opus of nonviolent resistance here in the United States. He said this: a riot is the language of the unheard, right? So, I mean, given the riots that we see in Detroit, we've seen riots in Los Angeles, Ferguson, Now we're seeing riots in Minneapolis. What do you think of riots? Is there a place for riots in the push for social justice, or
are you asking
or,
me?
Or no, I mean for everybody. This is a question for everybody. I think you kind of laid the foundation for this question, because riots generally come out of.
I was thinking about this exact. I was thinking about this exact thing earlier. It's foolish to think that riots have no place or that they're passe or old. We live in a world now where violence is kind of is frowned upon at the individual or society level, but violence still makes the world go round. And if you look back historically, violent protests and riots have always had a place. We're talking back with the Roman Empire, the French Revolution, the American Revolution. To some degree or another, it gets to a point where the people, the governed, get fed up with the way things are going. Whether that be what the higher class, the powerful, the aristocracy, whether it be what they are doing or whether it be what they're not doing. But as a result, the people get fed up and a riot happens. Riots sometimes are effective and they succeed and sometimes they don't. But historically, they have a place. So I understand that it's nice to say, oh, violence never works, violence never solves anything. No, violence solves a lot. Violence has solved a lot throughout history. And as much as it is undesirable, as much as you don't want to see it, it's ugly and everything like that. I mean, like, how many times are you going to let somebody kill your people before violence becomes a natural response?
If
you keep hitting me over and over and over, I've only got so many cheeks to turn before I'm going to swing back. And then when I swing back, don't call me the violent one.
Yeah,
people have been saying, let's stop making posters and marching and, you know, all of what is, you know, writing on posters and yelling out things is not getting it. Who was the what's representative was that she had her guys there? They were strapped to the nines with rifles. And she was, I think, just going to file some paperwork.
Oh, here in Michigan, yeah. Right?
Like, yeah. That was powerful.
Yep. Yeah.
State rep somebody. That was powerful. And then with the Ahmaud Arbery, there's a community activist I'm getting her name now, Shar Beasy. I don't know if you guys have heard about her. But she went to the community where Ahmaud was jogging with her Black Panther guys strapped up with rifles and everything. And yeah, the residents there were like, oh, hey, how you doing? You don't mess with me, I won't mess with you. She said, no problem. But what? You do need to show up. I think it's just time to stop. Let's get some riots going. Let's do something.
Let's get some riots going. Friday at 3? Does Friday at 3 sound good to you? We'll meet you there. I'll have some ribs.
Well, I think it was Nelson Mandela that said, when a man is denied the right to live the life he believes in, he has no choice to become an outlaw.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing about riots. I've mentioned this a number of times on this podcast, where I was in a play called The Meeting, where I played Malcolm X and another guy played Martin Luther King. And it's basically a conversation between the two. The author took their speeches and made this play. So it's as if their speeches were talking to each other, which is what their speeches actually were doing at the time. And one of the things that my character says to Martin Luther King is, hey, you know what? You know, you're talking about nonviolence. I'm bastardizing this script at this point, but you're talking about nonviolence. They're going to erect monuments to you before you're through. You know, they're gonna put these monuments up to you as a testament to your courage. As a testament to your courage. If they hold it up there long enough, they won't even realize the irony of it. You were killed preaching it. So I brought up Martin Luther King. Like, hey, we're talking about, he's saying riots are the language of the unheard, but we think of him as a nonviolent resistance, right? But the reason we revere Martin Luther King is one of the things we forget about him is he was killed in a very, very violent act. Whoa. And then we're expected to step into his message more fully because he's a martyr.
Well, not only that he was killed in a violent way, it was the second attempt on his life. It wasn't even the first. It was the second. And that he had been arrested a total, and I remind people this all the time, he had been arrested a total of 29 times for nonviolent civil disobedience. You know how many times Malcolm X, during his public work, got arrested? Zero.
He also had a lot of guns. You going after that guy?
Right.
Yeah, a lot of guns.
But I think your question is actually the wrong question. We should
give me the right question.
Riots have a place. We should view riots within the context of fight or flight. When you continually traumatize people, they're going to have one of two basic reactions. We study this in, or three reactions. We study this in basic psychology. They're either going to fly, freeze, or fight. So instead of saying, is there a place for riots? We should be saying, what is the trauma that is leading these people to fight? What is the trauma that is leading some people to fly? And what is the trauma that is leading some people to freeze?
Well, here's the thing.
Is in the context of Martin Luther King Jr., right, and Malcolm X, you also have people like James Baldwin who fleed.
Yeah, yeah, and that's something that I want to talk about, because I am 100% supportive of other people rioting. Like, I'm like, I got a good job. I got insurance. I got to take care. I got my wife. I got to take care of my family, my friends. And which I don't think is any different than people who march. Like, hey, you go to the march in Selma. It's cool. I support you 100%. I'm good. Not going to do it. Same thing with Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass was like, hey, raid on Harper's Ferry. Cool, man. John Brown, you go. I'm not cool with that, John Brown, but I'm going to bankroll it. I'm going to fund that shit. So my thought is, I am, you know, existentially, I am committed to the idea of the place of riot in a push for social justice, for racial justice. But at the same time, I'm not the person that's going to do it. This is my contribution. And if I'm honest, this is my contribution because, in a way, it's safer than rioting. And I hate that. I hate that I have to admit that reality.
My question would be this: What would be the purpose of the riot? Because, like, how many riots just in my lifetime alone can we recall? Like, I'm 50 years old now, right? And I can, off the top of my head, Rodney King, just before I was born, the Detroit riots, which were national riots, after. Now, how many different things? This one going on now. Mm-hmm. What are they changing right now? And
well, that's the thing about riots is, I mean, so Sean, to that question, most people do not pay attention to legislation. Like, I have an app called Countable, and Countable will tell me every single piece of legislation that is going through the House and the Senate at any given time. All right. That's cool. There are a ton of things going through right now. So when it comes to riots, it's like, oh, the riot happened. The riot police came out. Everything dispersed. Game over. That's not generally the case. What generally happens is there are sweeping legislative changes. Most of them happen at the local level. But there tend to be legislative changes that happen. But because most people are not engaged, and there's no accountable for, you know, your local government. There's no accountable app for your mayor, right, of your small town. There are sweeping changes that happen at the local and state level that most people do not pay attention to, that happen directly because, shit, man, like – 1,000 people showed up and they were very angry and we had to send out riot police. And then they keep showing up at the state house after the cameras have left.
Now, I don't think, I don't, I hope you don't misunderstand.
On top of that, riots.
No, go ahead. Hold on, Chris. Sean, go ahead there. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I hope you don't misunderstand what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying I'm against riots. I'm saying.
Right. I didn't hear that.
I understand the point of the riot, because these riots that are going on in Wisconsin right now, Minnesota, wherever they are, they're over the same issues that were going on over Rodney King, police brutality. I'll go back. How many of those things have changed? And what I'm listening to when you express what has happened over after the previous riot, the legislation that have changed, what I picture in my head is someone putting a band-aid on the problem and then slowly over time taking it off. And then we're going back over these issues again because we're not solving the problem. 20 years later, something else, a different generation dealing with the same thing.
Systemically, yes. I would say, like in Ferguson, you have more community input into the way that policing is done, and you have now more community patrolling than you have community policing. And I would make a differentiation between patrolling and policing, because patrolling is just like, hey, you know, like Grosse Pointe, Michigan, where the cops just come through and, hey, it's an idyllic town and everything's good. And policing, which, you know, you're broken windows, you're running in and you're assuming that everybody's a criminal in that neighborhood. You're starting to see those changes. When Ferguson had the riots, you started to have community activists who came in, who were being invited into city hall meetings, who were being invited into the police department to actually have those conversations with them. And so you started to see changes there. But those are the things that don't happen.
Those are things you don't see.
Yeah.
Because I have a friend who was on feet on the ground in Ferguson. That was a riot. That was not a riot.
Oh, no. I wouldn't. Yeah, go on.
That was people going through the proper procedure to have a peaceful protest. They went to the city, they got their permits, and they were mapped out a specific path for the route they were taking. And they got to a point in that route where they were cornered in. They could not go any further forward. They could not go to the left or the right. The only thing they could do was go back towards the police, who were technically supposed to be supporting them. And that is when all of a sudden the riot or the peaceful protest turned violent. But from the testimony of my friend, a white, deemed white activist, social or, you know, community organizer, no one from the peaceful march acted up. They all of a sudden out of nowhere had tear gas shot into the crowd and they all ran. And that's when it was all of a sudden deemed violent and instigated. It was presented as being instigated by the peaceful protests and outside agitators. And the exact same thing happened in Charlotte with the Keith Lamont Scott
peaceful protest. Well, to your point, Cedric, that may be, and again, context matters, so thank you for that perspective. I mean, because we're far removed, I knew that was true, but now we're so far removed, you forget the details. But to your point, that might be why, which goes back to the respectability politics thing, that might be why they're making the inroads that they have, is because they were peaceful. But it's interesting, violence happens against Black people, and we're the only ones we're the only ones expected to remain nonviolent.
Right.
Yep. We're the only ones expected to be nonviolent. But we're almost out of time. I got Dave to give us a few more minutes, but I do want to ask a question of everyone here, and I want Jennifer Kennedy to start, because you're the only white person on the post that I invited on that's not a host. How can anti-racist allies help with Black people's pain? And this is where you swim around. This is the pool you swim in, Jennifer.
Right.
So how can anti-racist allies, I'm keeping it together for how much I've been drinking, okay? How can you all help with Black people's pain through all this right now?
That's an interesting question. So something that I've really been trying to navigate in this space is, one, not making it about me and trying to figure out how I can best be used in this time. And so one of the things, because social media is so heavily trafficked at this point, with us all being home and all being online, one of the things that I'm trying to figure out and navigate is, what is my presence like online? So how can I be a voice of truth and speaking truth to white folks, essentially getting my people? But how can I do that in a way that honors Black people, pain, and does not promote? Because one of the biggest things that I'm struggling with is this thing that we're calling Black trauma porn. So this need for white people to see Black pain to believe it, this need for white people to see Black pain and Black trauma to become motivated. So I'm really trying to figure out in this space, how can I, and my friend Maisha T, she's at Check Your Privilege. She has this great post and she says 3 points. One, will this negatively impact the mental health of Black, Brown, Indigenous, API folks? Two, why am I sharing this? What's in it for me? Three, how do I grieve? And so there's a lot to that. But for me right now, particularly in light of this recent situation, I've had a lot of opportunities to go into the DMs, to talk to people, to engage them. And so like my heavy lifting is dealing with the white nonsense. My heavy lifting is having the 101 conversations. My heavy lifting is getting in and saying, you know, like, no, Cedric, you don't have to deal with this bullshit. You don't have to have this conversation if you don't want to. I'll deal with this person in this moment and have this conversation and spend hours, you know, trying to educate people and connect them to resources and point them toward Black educators, other people of color who are educators. So I've kind of forgotten your question because, you know, I have so many.
No, I just wondering how you can be an ally. And I think you answered it succinctly, but obviously since I don't want to center whiteness at the end of the show here, I do want to ask the others on the show. Obviously, Jen Kinney has stepped into those spaces. There are other people that look like her who have stepped into those spaces. I would say that Steve and Kent, by being even hosts on this show that consistently talks about race and race issues, have stepped into those spaces. If you notice, they've been silent almost the whole episode, which has been great. I love you guys. This is why we're great friends. Not because you're silent, but because you know when to stop and listen. But I would love to hear from the other panelists that I've invited on. What would your advice be to people who are stepping in, who don't look like us, who are trying to speak up for us? What would your thoughts be on that?
I got something.
Go ahead, Anthony.
I mean, let's go off what history is written. You know, usually when Black people, when us as a group, when we complain about something, you know, I can only imagine that, you know, the modern average white guy or white woman is like, well, they always complain about that, you know, what's next on the news? But usually when you see someone like, you know, a Jennifer Kinney or, you know, even a Taylor Swift or somebody who's a celebrity, you know, mainly in that world, stepping up and standing for a cause such as this or giving attention to this cause, when you have someone that is white standing next to the Black activist, I mean, it is unfortunate, but yeah, that helps get people to realize, hey, this is a big problem. And I know we always complain about this because it's a big, you know, fucking problem. Excuse my language. So it helps, you know, and I think, you know, if you are standing up, yeah, of course, reach out. Ask what you can do to help, you know, ask what you can do to stand up and, you know, bring awareness. So, yeah, that's my response.
Okay.
So I'll go next. So to me, what could be done is to start bringing in your circle of influence, the people that you, your white friends, your white family, your all everything white, you hold them accountable. If you hear them saying things that is a detriment to the Black culture. You know, well, he must have did something or she must have did something to deserve that. Check that. Don't allow them to continue to fire off and in that way. Start holding your circle accountable. Period.
Here's what. Oh, go ahead, Sean. Go ahead, Sean.
Oh, sorry. this is an analogy, I guess. I don't know how many of you have children, but when I was a father for the first time, when my firstborn boy, I wanted to challenge myself one time, and part of when I raised him, I went through this phase where I didn't want to say no to him, right? And he got into this thing one time with me, just me and him at home. My wife was at work, and I didn't have my second child at the time. And at that time, and one day he decided, all kids do this when they're starting to calculate life. They ask you why, right? And could be anything, why? So I knew this was coming because I'd seen other kids do this before he was born. And I'm like, if any kid asked me that, I'm thinking they're asking for a reason. So if my son ever asked me that, I'm going to just answer until he doesn't have a why anymore, right? So this happened here. He asked me why. So I'm okay. So I just answer his question and he does it again. Well, why? Well, why? Right? And I'm challenged. I was determined not to get upset, but just answer his question. So every why, this went on for 2 straight hours. Answering a bunch of random stuff, right? But I'm thinking he's growing, he's learning something. So I'm being proactive with his future by just answering whatever question he has. No question is stupid, but it's just why. That's the same thing we have to get to in this case in order to understand why these things keep happening. You have to get to the depth of that that question, why. Not the surface of it, the depth of it. Because this has been going on for over 500 years. Before colonialism was started in the actual race, where the term racism comes from, was started from Europe in the developing America, there was a why that was at that started all of that, yeah. The reason. Well, that is part of the depth of this seed here. And because we keep talking about the Band-Aid, what's under the Band-Aid, we're not getting to what is the cancer or what was the nucleus of the issue, because nobody wants to dig into anyone's mentality. They just want to gloss over it, move on to the next thing until we see it. It raises ugly head again, turns into a riot, and then press repeat.
Right.
We're not digging anymore. And that's where this has to go, in my opinion. If it's the white society, the dominant society, which is in control of America, that's where the deep digging has to be. Not accusing anyone of anything, because we know what's being honest. You know those in charge and what they're doing. You can see it now. It's out in the open now. But why? Mm. You know, they're not gonna tell us, because we're not the ones being indoctrinated the way they are. Right.
Right.
Those who are in those groups, they really want to get to the core answers that we're struggling with now, the results of life that we're seeing, experience now. On their side, they have to ask why, and they have to be able to answer to why? I don't even know what the answers would be. But once that deep dig happens by them, to them, from them, then we'd at least be able to understand where to go next. But until you do that, you're not really going to fix anything. You're just going to recycle this thing again. You're going to be here talking about it again next week, next year, next month, decade from now, until someone gets to the bottom of why.
Shit, at this week is every week.
Yeah.
Is it? Jesus. Seriously.
So anybody else on that question before I kind of land this plane?
Go ahead. Sorry.
Chris, go ahead.
I would say the best thing, I remember from that movie, A Time to Kill, when Matthew McConaughey made that final speech. The best thing a person could do is, and this speaks more to one-on-one scenarios, but it could also apply kind of more abstractly, is if you're a white person, imagine that the thing you're seeing happening is happening to your son, to your white son.
Yep.
And if you can stomach it happening to your white son, then maybe it's not that bad. But if you know you wouldn't tolerate it, then, you know, speak up. Do what you would do in such a situation. Do what you know what I've always said. America loves its white little girls. So imagine that you're a white little girl and do what you would do as if something was happening to your white little girl. I mean,
I, for one, Chris, prefer Samuel L. Jackson's speech. Yes, I killed them, and I hope they burn in hell.
Yeah,
that's the best speech in that movie. Let's be honest.
Calvin, that's the first. That was the blind date I went on with my wife. That's what we went to see.
Oh, are you serious? Oh, yes. That's some shit. You're dating yourself right there.
That was our first movie.
Chris, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I had to throw the joke in there for some levity. But I'm sorry if I interrupted your final thoughts on that.
No. That was about it. I mean, I know it sounds simple. I know it maybe sounds passe. But I mean, if you put that conscious thought in your head, like not only could this be my kid, but if you're a white person, imagine that it is your white son or your white daughter. If you would behave differently, then go about it as if it was your kid.
Yo,
okay.
That means you got to stand up and say something. Then you stand up and say something. If it means you step in as an irate mom or irate dad, then do that. But treat it as if the person being accosted, the person being wronged or what have you, is not some unfortunate minority, but imagine it's your flesh and blood.
Unfortunately, we believe it or not, it is almost 11:30 at night, and I gotta land this plane. We got I know we could go much further on this. My shows are normally at 8 p.m. on Sunday nights. We'll probably do this again, but the guy who owns the studio has another show coming in behind us at 11:30 on Eastern Standard Time. But just one of the things that I would say, just my counsel to anti-racist allies to help with just to help with black people's pain is don't speak over black people. Don't speak over us. And I know that that's a fine line to walk. And Jennifer Kinney and I have actually had this conversation. Actually, I think you really got like raked over the coals for this, Jennifer. In terms of like having to change pretty much the whole trajectory of the show that you were doing called Speaking of Racism. Great podcast. If you haven't listened to it, listen to the Speaking of Racism podcast. But that led to like a whole new host for the show. You and her having really intimate conversations about what that could look like. But I actually had somebody apologize to me recently because there's a balance between a black person who's equipped to talk about this and has the emotional stability to talk about this is kind of taking this on. And balancing that between white allies coming in and saying, hey, look, let me do this for you so you don't have to. I'll do the emotional labor for you. There's a nice fine line in there. And I had somebody apologize to me last week because I was being asked questions and I was trying to explain, and she was doing her white social justice warrior thing where she hopped in and explained it for me. And I was like, that would be good for like a million other people. And I get it. And I love your heart, but I'm very equipped for this. This is what I'm built to do. This is what I've made my whole life about. So learning not to talk over black people, or at least having those conversations with black people to know, is this where I need to step in, or is this where I need to step back? That's one of those big things for me. And again, if you've noticed, Kent and Steve have almost entirely stepped back tonight. We've had these conversations. It's been very, very good. They've learned at least through the conversations that we've had, but on our show. But we have to be done because we've got this other show coming on. Unfortunately, I was not expecting that tonight. But thank you all so much for being on tonight. Chris calling in from Afghanistan, Sean calling in from Canada, everybody else calling in from. Well, no, I mean, so April, you're calling in from Ohio, right? Ohio?
Illinois.
Okay, so the Midwest, the Midwest, and South Detroit as well. Cedric calling in from the South. So thank you all so much for calling in. It's been
thanks for having us on.
No problem. Very cathartic conversation. And for those of you listening via obviously podcast. Thanks so much for listening to Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. Make sure you check out our website, leadingquestionsnow.com, where you can find all of our episodes from this season, the last six seasons now, bios, a calendar of upcoming topics, and even suggest topics for us to talk about. If you're interested in having our program out to your college, university, or organization, whenever that happens again, email us at hello@leadingquestionsnow.com, and we will get back to you. Don't forget, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and, of course, the Podcast Detroit app. Please leave us a review. That's very important, and we will see you when we see you.